leave it there. Okay.
Testing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm interested in the modern blues dance. There seems to be a lot of contradictory information flying around.
Is there? Yeah.
Some people say it's in no way a historical dance. Other people say, oh yeah, there are people that in the Mississippi area who learned that dance as children with their families and going out teaching it, so you know, it's really grown up with them. And I don't know what to believe. So I want to get to the bottom of that question. So, I mean, do you know what I'm...
Yeah, well, I mean, the movement of that kind of dancing has, of course, been around. Of course, it's been around for many, many years. It's just semantics. It just wasn't necessarily called the same thing we expect it to be called today. So there's a little bit of truth to that, of course. But and of course, it depends on, you know, what you mean by modern blues as well, because it takes a shape. It's completely different. Let's say, for instance, what they do in one city, like a popular city, like San Francisco or Chicago, would be totally different as what's done in, let's say, Los Angeles or, Seattle. When they do their blues thing up in Seattle, it's very diverse. And you have the traditionalists and you have the modernists, and everybody's together, you know. And there's a better example of a visual differences. It's a very difficult, like you said, it gets really down to semantics. I think how far does it really go back, you know, that kind of a thing. I mean, partner dancing in the African American community is a whole different story than what the white population was doing, so to say. You know,
I heard somebody describe one of them as Duke and the other as Ballroom. Is that the same concept?
One is Duke. Well, Duke is a weird word in the first place because it's obviously juke joints and stuff like this, but I mean, that's just a stylized name of an establishment it's very...
So you wouldn't identify that as a dance?
No, not today, no, because the jukes in the South, they dance, and it's not just slow dancing. It's all tempos. So that's why. It means more than slow. Juke doesn't mean slow dancing. Also,
you say blues dance does mean slow dancing.
Well, I would say yes, because that's the common understood aspects of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Although that technique should be able to be done at all tempos, which is a stepping, it's just basic stepping. It also gets into an aspect like, you know, like Frankie talks about what he used to do in Harlem. You know, that style of dancing would not be done in public. It would have been done in a smaller environment, as you've heard the stories, house rent parties and so forth. And that's where, you know, technically speaking, they didn't really allow the children to get into that aspect. That was for the adults.
Were you saying that was which dance is that?
Well, it's what Frankie, it's like when people talked about blues dancing here in Harang, you know, Frankie identified that as to something. Oh, you call it blues. Yeah, we did that too, you know. But how they did it might not have been the same, so to say, you know. And you know, people like Frankie were pretty honest about how they used to do it, you know, and by that I mean, you know, they would put the, you know, it was very sexual, so that's where you put the girl against the wall, this kind of a thing, you know. Yeah, absolutely, which is this.
I think we're getting into the semantics here, because you said, you know, you do it differently, but it's the same thing, so.
Movement, body movement. And when I say body movement, I'm talking about a really loose body and how perhaps the more modern blues dancers would dance.
So the kind of things that you would, I think there's no question when I watch solo blues dancing that's basically the same movements that I can see in the old clips.
Right, exactly.
That's what you mean by body movement, is it?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
The way you move your whole body, torso and everything. But it's up in the head.
But the modern dance is, I mean, if you say you've been out blues dancing to me, I would understand that to mean a partner dance.
Right.
So
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I would. Solo blues dancing to me is something that was done. It's an exhibition.
Right.
You know, in the Spirit Moves, it's absolutely an exhibition for documentation purposes. But that was a stage. It's something that you do as a performance. It's kind of like a burlesque. It falls under the forms of burlesques. And there's all kinds of those that are very much related. But you know, you give a blues dancer, a prop. It's an umbrella.
Yeah.
It becomes the umbrella dance.
Okay.
You know, I mean, literally, silks becomes a silk dance. Fans, it becomes a fan dance. You know, so that's a really difficult aspect. I mean, like foxtrot, there's 100,000 foxtrots, it seems like. But it was just a hand position difference between the last one. The way you move your, you know, I mean, today we would look at it and say it's all the same. Because we're all stepologists.
Right.
And we look at the feet and break it down. And so, it's all the same. You know, how is that foxtrot different than that foxtrot? Well, look at their arms.
You look at the feet in the blues dance, you don't see anything at all.
If they're stationary, correct. But if you go back to the teens, there was a blues dance. Mm-hmm. But it was done by white people, and it was what I would consider part of the ballroom vernacular. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just a slow one step. You know, we got pictures of it, don't got it on film, unfortunately, but I have the pictures of it. And all that step one, figure two, figure three. Mm-hmm. But that's called the blues.
Right.
And so...
So that's a different meaning of the phrase blues. Blues dance.
Today it would be, yeah. You know, for academic notes, but of course, but you're right. To a blues dancer today, they go, but that's not the blues I do.
Yeah.
Well, but that's 1915. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? So it gets into the...
But then the Lindy Hop we do today is not exactly the Lindy Hop that was done in 1915.
Right. It depends. Correct. It depends on who you're watching, to be honest, and how the, you know. It depends on who you're watching, because there are people that are pretty damn authentic. But the general scene, you're correct. Yes, they've added swing steps to their Lindy Hop. They've added shag steps to their Lindy Hop. Those over rotated tuck turns, you know, which are familiar. We see in with the dance bow swing. You know, that's been added into the Lindy. West Coast swing patterns and or tricks, arm pat led things has leaked in. So absolutely, it's one of those things where Lindy Hop's just been speckled with decades and decades of influence.
And indeed, that's how it was created in the first place.
In a way, sure.
Yeah. But people talk about Lindy Hop being a revival. Modern
well, the revival era was the 80s.
Okay.
And then it ended. Then came the neo swing era.
Okay.
And that was the 90s.
Okay.
You know, so one was strictly studio people learning how to do steps. The revival people were learning how to do the culture. Starting in 2000, you could say, I'm being very general right now, it all came together. Mm-hmm. And there you have the Harlem Hotshots.
Yeah.
That got it.
Yeah.
They understood. They put the two and two together and were the best. You know. Yeah, the Zackies and the Fridas and stuff. They, you know, well, and they social dance. They dress the part. They learn the music. They love the music. You know, it didn't start with just a sport, steps, learning and copying. While they were amazing at copying in the 80s, they certainly didn't get the background oomph of the dance at all, and they didn't social dance that much.
Did they get the technique? Or is that maybe it's difficult to learn technique?
I don't think they got the technique 100%, but they certainly did on a lot of the moves and tricks and patterns, of course, because they were so good at their blocking and number one and number two, achieving that movement or that step. They had to do some common sense aspects, which is what I would consider like more closely related to gymnastics. And learning how does this work? How do I do around the back? Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, in some places like here, they were really good at learning how those techniques work to achieve that. But also, if you look at those clips, you'll see the dynamics really aren't there in the one thing, and it's like the basics of the swing out. They're still a little bit running around each other, not quite understanding the whip concept. But it's not no fault to them at all, not at all.
It's just they didn't have the information.
Yeah, well, and they didn't social dance enough.
Yeah.
That's the thing with other people and really understand the techniques and power.
So you said by about 2000 they got it?
Just roughly speaking, 2000, 2001, you know.
So that's probably the closest point that the mummy Lindy got has come to the old stuff.
That's where it all came back, I think. That's when it really, the 90s were trying to be authentic as possible mm-hmm. without the dance background. Mm-hmm. With, of course, huge failures and a little success as well. But that's why I'm saying it was when the two came together, the cultural people, the lifestyler people, with the sport people, dance studio people, then that's where the magic really started coming together really cool,
okay.
Making it work.
And you say, so that's then really close to the past dance.
It's what?
Then the dance that they're doing in 2000 is then really similar to the
Maybe a little bit after 2000, but okay. For sure, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. And I'm talking again about, you know, the best, not everybody.
Yeah.
And there will always be that divide of people want to dance for different reasons. And so there's, you know, because people want to dance for different reasons, you can't blame them for, you know,
And it's going to,
let's get mad at this guy for not being authentic, but he doesn't care about authentic, you know.
Absolutely. It's going to keep evolving.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and then,
that's,
you know, we
right.
had, during the 90s, we had this whole, you know, this whole cultural revival, I would call the neo-swing thing, which was, of course, more about the music, absolutely. There was no such thing as really a DJ. As far as, the DJ was filling in the job of a band, and there was always a band, and on the breaks there would be DJs, you know. So it was a whole different thing. Whereas in the studios, pretty much they just want to dance to the same tempos. So it'd either be by a DJ or they would hire bands and they would tell the bands how to play the tempos that's required of them. And that would be the studio mentality.
Excuse me. Do you know where the restrictions are?
Ooh.
What time is it now?
Probably 5 or something. 5 or 6.
Six.
I think it's closed now. You can come back at 10:15,
yeah.
And it will be in here.
The library.
Okay, so can I go from the front?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the reason I was asking you that is because I want to establish, you know, what it means to say that Lindy Hop is a revival dance.
Well, it came back.
Yeah.
It was revived.
And I don't know much about Argentine tango, but that's described as a revival dance as well.
Well, I would say, that's out of my area of knowledge, so I don't even want to go there too much because it has spread all over the world now. Some of the best are in Finland, you know, this kind of a thing. I can tell you there is a divide between what I would say is the more authentic styles of Argentine tango and then the more modern styles of Argentine tango. But other than that,
okay.
Yeah, it's a little bit out of my...
And then Balboa, I'm pretty sure you would say is a revival.
Absolutely, yeah, I would say so in a way, sure. Balboa is a unique dance in itself. Now, first off, we have to establish what does Balboa mean, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about the authentic Balboa shuffle, then it's a completely different thing. What most people call Balboa is Bal Swing, mm-hmm. which of course is a new term for swing in LA before the Lindy. So there's these different aspects of the dance. But I would say, yes, absolutely it's a revival dance. You know, when I started the California Balboa Swing Championships around 1999 or 2000, it was to show the old timers before they died that their dance has come back. The young people are now doing your dance. Mm-hmm. They're not doing the Lindy Hop. Mm-hmm. They're not doing, we're doing your thing.
All right.
You know, that was the only reason for that. It wasn't.
So just out of interest, why did you want to show them that?
Because all kinds of reasons. I mean, number one, those are the people that inspired us and got us dancing. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that we latched onto. We had our own, in a semantic kind of weird way, we had our own Frankie Mannings. We had our own, you know, Normas. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing, because for the neo-swingers, for us, you know, going out and listening to the bands and all this stuff, we didn't think about it as any specific era. It was just all old. We call it Americana, roots Americana. So it could be some Western style swing, it could be big band, small band combos. It's just old. And then when we discovered the dance, shortly thereafter, we were going to places like Golden Sales or Bob and McGee's, and we're seeing all these old people, and they're having their own jam sessions. They're having their own one-upmanship, battling it out, and it's really cool. Something that our grandparents might not necessarily done, mine didn't, So I was like, wow, what is this? You know, this is like the Fountain of Youth. And they're battling just like the old movies or like breakdancers, you know. And so, I mean, you had that skill at that age for one thing. And then, of course, when you start talking to these people and finding out, wow, these are actually, they were in the motion pictures. They actually won these massive contests. I think one of the biggest contests in history was the Los Angeles Coliseum in around 38. I mean, there's 1,000 competitors. There's nothing like that, you know. And to meet the kids that won it and the runner-ups and all that, you're like, you know, pretty impressed.
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking about people that grew up in my neighborhood. Well, I know that. I lived right there. He lived right there. There's a ballroom right there. Wow. Now it's a soda joint or, you know, whatever. And so there's a totally different, there's a regional connection that we could understand.
So basically it's because then because you have personal relationships.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is all personal. Yeah. Absolutely. Not just myself. I'm one of a few. And that was one of the things when they saw us dancing, we weren't very good dancers, and we were in trying to copy everything from the old movies, be it Lindy Hop, be it the Lindy, as Dean Collins called it, be it the Harlem dancers, Savoy, Lindy Hoppers, be it the Arthur Murray Shag dancers, all these stuff. We copied everything. We would never limit ourselves to any one thing. We were classic neo-swing dancers, you know, like a neo-swing musician. You borrow and take throughout history. You know, one song might be a total bebop song, and the next one's more swing oriented. The next one might have a little mambo beat to it. It's all retro. You know, it was just being presented differently. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy with zoot suit pants, a wife beater shirt with tattoos. It's like, wait a minute, this is grandpa's music, but this is not grandpa, you know? And so it was being presented to us in a new way that it was sellable to us, the young generation that didn't dance. Mm-hmm. Now it becomes cool. Mm-hmm. And so it was that whole adaption, and the dance was the same, you know? Whereas the revivalists were, most commonly, revival dancers were all dancers previously to learning the Lindy Hop. You know, whether you're the Jiving Lindy Hoppers or whether you're a Pasadena ballroom dancer or whether you're from Sweden doing the Yitterbug, they all were dancers. And then they discovered this cool thing called the Lindy Hop, and they stepped it one up to this new dance. But the neo swing era, we're non-dancers. Totally different approach.
That's me.
Yeah. And myself. And so when you go and you meet these old people that dance, I'm not really, the steps are cool. And yes, I want to do learn the steps, but more interesting to me was the stories behind why do you dance? What makes you dance? This guy here is a conservative political Republican. This guy is a hardcore liberal pot smoker and they're buddies and they've been friends for 50, 60 years or so. And to me, that was like, wow, all these people coming together at this bar to hang out and, you know, and dance. It was really intriguing. And hearing their stories, like I said, and you know, those are amazing to me. And that's, unfortunately, learning half the dance for myself is the stories behind them, not the steps. Sometimes the stories explain everything. I don't even need to know the steps. If you would have just told me that the babo is standing in place and shuffling, period. Mm-hmm. That I couldn't understand if by breaking down the steps. In a million years, I got the steps. I didn't understand the approach in the head, you know? And so the stories are what helped me just understand why you danced, who, you know.
And the revival has captured that as well.
Oh, well, the revival didn't get that at all.
Right.
The neo-swing era was the one that was slow, trying to learn that.
Okay.
We struggled through the 90s trying to understand the psychological aspects behind the dance.
You tried to meet that before. All right.
You know, many of us remember the first Lindy Hoppers that showed up at the Derby. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they came in their tennis shoes, some funny, like high-waisted pants and a t-shirt.
I don't know what the Derby is.
Sorry. It's a swing club in Hollywood.
Okay.
It was probably the most famous swing club all through the 90s.
Okay.
I mean, that's where Royal Crown Review got their start every Wednesdays. And, I mean, that was the place. Hollywood Derby. It's a very famous landmark. And so that was kind of the epicenter for it. There in a place called the Blue Cafe. Those are the two main, I think, influential places. And many others as well. And but it was a place you're going to go in the environment. You know, you dressed a certain way. And of course, when the Lindy Hoppers showed up, the first couple, like I said, it was like high-waisted pants, like a Zoot style of pants. But then with Nikes and a t-shirt with suspenders over them. And, you know, it's all about the capturing the Whitey's Lindy Hoppers look and stuff.
Yeah.
And we were like, wow, cool dancing, but you guys don't look the part at all, you know. And it was because of them that places like the Derby, and the Viper Room and places like that, they started putting dress codes down because of the Lindy Hoppers. Like I said, we were just neo swingers, and we were into the fashion, the cars, the music, the whole ball of wax. And then, of course, a girl would grab you and pull you on the floor, and you didn't know what to do. And then you saw somebody really cool dance, and you're like, wow, this is something I should maybe could do, but only because it's physical and it's cool, not because we're dancers or, you know. To ask me to foxtrot in 92 would have been ridiculous, you know. That's what grandpa does, and it's, you know, I don't want a girl in my arms like that long. That's crazy, you know. So it just, the whole psychological aspects of dance was that there's basically, you know, that was the, us trying to figure that out and understand it, because we didn't, in the beginning, we didn't. And those are the stories we kept getting told. As far as the blues goes, like I said, again, that was something you would do with the girl that you really liked. You didn't change. Well, none of us changed partners in the 90s that much at all.
Right.
We went out with our girlfriends. We all met our other friends, you know, whether it was Minna Karina, Eric and Sylvie, or Eric and Josie, and where are you guys going to go tonight? We all go there and meet, and we all dance around each other and inspire one another on the dance floor, especially in places like the Derby where it's so crowded. One couple would block the crowd in the corner so one couple could dance, and then we'd take turns during each chorus, one-upping each other. You could say like a little mini jam session, I suppose, but it was more socially friendly. It wasn't battling necessarily, but it was a total camaraderie of survival, because you had, you know, so many tourists there to dance.
So and what was everyone else dancing then?
Oh, just, I would say, frantic, six-count, rockabilly swing, East Coast swing, whatever the names are given all over the world. Some people call it jive, I guess, but just some random stuff like that. Yeah, so that was, you know, that was all part of the progress. You know, people see the, everything was swing-oriented in the 90s, you know. With, you know, we had, like I said, Royal Crown Review started this whole thing, and then the bands followed, other bands followed.
You said you had you would dance the blues with your girlfriend in the 90s.
Yes. We wouldn't have called it that.
You wouldn't have called it
that? No, okay. Just slow dancing.
Just slow dancing. But was that the same dance that we dance today and call the blues?
It depends on who you're talking about. Right. I'd have to see a couple to understand that. Yeah, if I go up here on a Tuesday night,
Okay.
For sure. But that's why they changed the name slow drag here, not blues. And it was because...
To be more precise,
it would be the nicest way to put it. Right. To be more authentic, and to not offend other people.
Okay.
You know, that's to be true. That's the truth. You know, okay. we don't want to fight anybody here.
No.
You know, and if you're doing this groovy thing where you know, if you're doing this groovy thing in America where you're always changing partners and it's not sexual, well, we don't want to call ourselves the same thing because this is sexual.
Mm-hmm.
This is a platform to do that if you so choose.
Mm-hmm. So would you be able to enumerate maybe some of the other kinds of blues that are around today?
Well, slow drag is by far the most, I mean, that's the one that's kind of the authenticity of, you know, slow drag appears, I mean, that's a typical New Orleans thing, but at the same time, not just in New Orleans, and in Harlem as well. There was I wish I could remember the year, but it was in the late 20s. I'm going to guess 27, 28. And there was a slow drag scene in a production in Harlem. Or, you know what, it might not have been even in Harlem. It could have been in Broadway, but nonetheless, in New York. And it was a house rent party scene on stage, and a couple does the slow drag. And unfortunately, we don't know what it looks like, but we do know the critics, what they wrote about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not like, you know, having two African-Americans doing such a sexual thing on stage was not cool at all at that time. But it is a very sexual thing. And that's what they wanted to retain. So they went straight for that name to be authentic because the focus here is Harlem, you know. You know, one of the great...
I'm not quite sure what the slow drag is. I mean, if I go to a blues night in, I mean, I'm quite new to this.
Right.
If I go to a blues night in London, or say, just a club, they're playing blues music, people are getting together, they're dancing, there's lots of chess connection, you know the dance I mean.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing?
It could be, certainly. It's up here in your head. Are you being sexual? Are you flirting in your dance with this person? Are they receptive? Or what's the word? Recep, receptive to what you're doing? Are they? Is it a call and response sexual thing, play for thing?
I think most people wouldn't do it with a random stranger if it was a sexual thing.
Well, it just depends on where you live.
Well, that's true.
It's, you know, yeah, it depends on the club and where, you know. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, no, absolutely they do. It just depends on where you are and who you're with and who you're hanging out with, the mood. That stranger might be just as into you as you're into that person. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, of course it has to be mutual. Mm-hmm. And that's the boundary that I'm always like, you know, whoa, you know. I'd want there to already be some kind of a connection before I attempt that. Okay. Whether it was just meeting that person at the bar, chatting for a second, getting a drink and saying, you want to dance? You know, you got to have some kind of an introduction before okay. You don't just ask a person to dance and do something like that.
Okay, well, that's basically what we do. I mean, you know, you see old men dancing with young girls and you see old women dancing with young boys.
But that depends on where you're at.
Yeah.
Some of them old timers dancing in Los Angeles, the young girls were sexually incredible.
Right.
And they're like, wow, they're getting away with murder. But the only reason is because he's so old.
Right.
You know, John Mills is the classic one. This guy, but he's unfortunately gone. But he was up in his 90s and he was a raunchy, pelvic thrusting, you know.
Yeah.
And it was funny because the girls were like, you know, that was like you've been baptized or you've been initiated. Right. But the old timers now, you know. And would the same girl have accepted that with somebody else her own age? Probably not. So you're right. There's this interplay culture that just changes from city to city, from country to country. That's, we can't use a broad brush stuff like this. No way. It's just not fair for anybody, especially in different countries and cultures. It's the same thing with, like I said, the pure Balboa, you know.
Okay. So, I mean, I've been kind of skirting around the issue, but what I'm really trying to ask you is whether you see the modern blues scene as a revival dance in the same way as Balboa?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No, it's a new dance.
It's a new dance?
Generally speaking. Generally speaking.
So...
But not 100%. That's what I'm saying. I don't want a broad brush.
Okay.
But when I'm talking about American-style blues, you know, the general consensus is, no, it's a new dance.
Okay.
There are some people trying to recreate. Of course there are. But once you remove the sexualness from it, you don't got it anymore.
Right.
You know?
So the American-style blues doesn't have the sexual element?
Mostly not. But not 100%, you know. There's a time and a place.
So that would be then different from slow drag?
Oh, yeah. Well, slow drag is sex, period. Right. End of story.
And that's what you say we do up here?
Supposed to. Right.
Okay.
Or at least available.
Okay.
It's available.
And if we go to, say, the secret blues party in Heaven's Kitchen?
Yeah, I would imagine here it'd be pretty raunchy.
Probably.
My guess would be it's pretty raunchy. But at the same time, you have to understand that just because you do it for 3 minutes, you don't have to take it off the floor.
Yeah.
It ends right there.
Yeah.
You can get as sexual as you want. We both have an understanding when the song ends, we depart our ways.
Yeah.
You know. Or the mutual agreement's there and you continue doing it. It felt so damn good, you do it with that one person all night. That would be authentic. Just like pure Balboa.
Okay.
You know, you do change. You do ask people to dance until you find that one. And then you stick with that one.
So if the modern blues dance is not a revival, then where did it come from? Where did it evolve out of?
Personally, I think it was... well, I think the seed was probably planted either in Chicago or that's my guess, because I just go back to remembering back in the, you know, early 90s and how they were dancing their Lindy, so to say, swing dancing. It was really, really slow. So slow that the first exchange had a lot of complaints. Mm-hmm. That's not even Lindy Hop music, blah, 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 you know. That's, you know, I mean, that's... Be honest with you, being from
Los. So they were calling it Lindy Hop.
Well, not what they're doing blues. I'm saying it was a slower, 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 and then there was some people called the style of Lindy Hop groove style or whatever, and it was more or less. I would have to say more. I would give credit mostly to people like Stephen Mitchell, mm-hmm. And of course other people followed him, his students and so forth, the Bill Borghitas and these people, and they created a new thing really. Absolutely. But the thing is, they were dancing to the music. They were following the music. Music was dictating what they were doing. Mm. They didn't just do this to anything. Mm. You know, and I'm talking about like the early 60s, Oscar Peterson, Moton Swing, and, you know, this kind of stuff. Ernestine Anderson, and applying some of the, you know, concepts of their partner dancing, Lindy stuff, to this. And so, I mean, it just got groovier and groovier as far as that goes. But the truth is, the beginning of blues, it was made fun of a lot in the very early days. It was, you know, people made fun of it, of course, you know, and, you know, derogatory comments were made about it. Oh, they couldn't get the Lindy Hop, so they did this, or blah, 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 you know, which is partially
which
true.
Which is still here,
actually. Yeah, it's partially true and it's partially not true. You know, there's, it's a weird time we live in, you know. I mean, it's, if you think about how many people are doing, you know, today in 2015 or 14, people are doing, you know, yoga, Pilates, you know, these spiritual things of you know, I mean, it's cultural, you know, and some of it's just seamless into one kind of a, you know, style of life.
Lindy's not the only influence on modern blues.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
But now, no, I'm talking about the earlier
okay,
when it first,
right.
When the first blues dance.
Well, let's progress the story then.
You know,
okay.
I think people pull it from all sorts of places, because now you have people, you know, like I said, the Seattle one, you know, you have people like Mike Faltasek teaching authentic jazz movement and steps to apply into their blues,
okay.
Where then you have modernists also teaching and doing what they do without any historical background to what they're actually teaching, other than, I'm just going to teach you to be a better dancer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about history. I'm just going to make you a better dancer. And that's what everybody was doing all through the 90s and early 2000s.
I feel that's what Peter and Naomi have been teaching in the slow dance track.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best you could ever get.
Mm-hmm.
That, in my opinion, that's what you want. That's what you want out of a teacher, really. Generally speaking, I'm here to make you a better dancer. If you want to talk about history,
that's what's
go to Google.
Yeah.
Or go talk to this guy who dwells on history, like myself. You know, because authenticity is irrelevant in having fun.
Yeah.
It's totally irrelevant. If you want a demo of some time period, okay, whatever. But you know, but this is not about steps. It's about a feeling, and it's about that unfortunate line of what's appropriate and what's not. You know, and a lot of cultures, let's face it, all over the world, you got to leave room for baby Jesus. You know, but that is as far as from the early style as you can get, because of the whole concept of history and understanding that aspect. And a juke joint, there's no such thing as that, period. You know, that's just how it is, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, these names come and go through history. You know, juke was a popular name for a little while, totally out of vogue, you know. Roadhouse. You know, these are just things that come and go throughout history, and they change. You know, the meanings slightly change. There still is roadhouses, I suppose, in juke joints, you could say, but go there and look. It's not the same.
Yeah.
The jukebox, look at the music on the jukebox. Look at the people in there. You know, this used to be a place where whites weren't allowed. Well, segregation's illegal now, so now whites are allowed, so to say. Stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's changed and blended and, you know. And then even when there is people blending together in a club, that doesn't mean they're going to actually mingle.
Mm-hmm.
At first, anyways, mm-hmm. It takes time. You can't just change history in a heartbeat. And so there is definitely a divide, for sure. That's why I prefer the name slow dance.
Yeah. Well, depending what...
There's
what
no confusion.
Naming? What are you naming?
What's that?
What are you naming? That's a much broader term, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's tempo.
Yeah.
What you do. I don't care what you call it.
Slow
drag,
dance,
blues,
define, so.
Whatever, you know. You know, trying to put specific names to dances can be counterproductive, totally counterproductive. You know, when I'm teaching my class, I say, but what style of Lindy Hop is this? You know, it's just, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to put a name to it because there is no real specific name. This is just a part of history.
So, okay, well then, something that people seem to disagree about a lot is whether there is overlap between Lindy Hop and blues.
Well, the difference would be, in the old days, Lindy Hoppers did slow dancing. And today they don't. Or some do, of course, but no. You know, Lindy Hopper's out to Lindy Hop.
Yeah.
I'm out to perform on the social floor. You know, blues dancers right now, I'm out to either inward expression dance or outward expression dance, very slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like performance blues.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird, but, you know,
it's
socially, it's odd.
Wonderful to watch, actually.
Yeah, on stage, it has its time, and out on the floor in a floor routine or a floor show. Of course it has its place. Everything has its place. But when you take it out of that and put it on the social floor, that's where we have the confusions. Mm. Same thing with the Lindy Hoppers here. When they're out upstairs, they're all performing. Mm. And they're like, but you're supposed to be watching how much space you take. You're supposed to watch out for your follower. You're supposed to, this is social. But at the same time, this is a dance. This isn't the real world. People signed up at the door to do this thing. So we're all here to kill each other and kick the hell out of each other. You go into the real world, that kick might get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the part where I want, it's almost like my thing is a lot has to do with that, is teaching etiquette. Mm-hmm. The reason is, I think everybody has a responsibility in the dance, and that is to, when you do go out in public, display the dance in good light. Don't make enemies. And unfortunately, most people don't. Lindy Hop is not a very positive thing in the real world. You know, if you're like, oh, here comes the Lindy Hoppers. You know, it's like, oh no, it shouldn't be that. It should be awesome. The Lindy Hoppers are here. You know, but it's not, because they didn't learn the etiquette. They didn't learn it's not about you. You want to be one of the band and, you know, and show some respect for the band, or do you want to just go out and perform?
Well, I completely agree with you, and
right.
In our club we do teach that sort of thing. But I know what you're talking about. I've been to other scenes and I'm,
you know,
really,
yeah,
quite rude. Yeah.
And well, the people don't realize that the Savoy Ballroom, Lindy Hoppers knew how to foxtrot. They all foxtrotted. Mm. It was tempo dance. When you got down to a certain tempo, they didn't swing on anymore. They did the foxtrot. Mm. It was when the music really started kicking that they swung out. And that's the thing. Every dance has its tempo. Mm-hmm. When it got really fast, they did the Peabody. Mm-hmm. People here, they start swinging out faster and faster. But like Frankie says, oh man, we had fun with it. We raced around the ballroom. And then maybe the last chorus, we would swing out and go crazy. But they knew all these dances and they applied them appropriately. Today people learn one. They learn the Lindy Hop. And they start with the Lindy Hop. And that's like, you know, like I did, so to say. And it's almost impossible. It'll take you years to become a good dancer because you don't have any tools to start dancing. You start out here and it's good luck, you know. And it seems like not enough people really listen to the old timers. They only want to hear what they want to hear. They don't want to hear the fact that they all started with something like the box step or the foxtrot and the waltz, either by their mom, their brother, their sister, the local park, the local school, as young children. And then they saw what the older kids were doing. Wow, that's what I want to do. But they already had the tools necessary to lead and follow. And here is these people trying to learn these crazy performance dances, and like Lindy Hop, and they don't have the tools necessary to do it. You want to start with a performance dance before you know how to lead? That's crazy, you know. And of course, now we've changed the word.
So you're calling Lindy Hop a performance dance?
That's, yes,
that's
of course.
That's surprising to
me. Well, it started as that. Yeah, in a contest.
Right.
It wasn't done socially for a couple of years.
Okay.
Before, I should say it wasn't done for at least, according to Terry Monahan, at least 6 months to a year. Attempted to do it in any kind of social thing. It wasn't accepted at the Savoy Ballroom for a couple of years, though, because the whole ballroom's traveling.
Yeah,
and I don't want to destroy business by putting some frantic young boys in there that are kicking everywhere. So, that's just common business. You know, if you have all your customers circling the floor, last thing you need is somebody to put a kink in that. Mm-hmm. And that goes for both all coasts. Mm-hmm. There's three aspects of the dance, of course. But people have to understand the social aspects in the 30s was grabbing a person and just trying to make that swing out work. That's it. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't work because we're two different people and there's no formula. Mm-hmm. All I know is I pull you in and I'm supposed to let you go. Mm-hmm. And then I pull you back in. And you can do something cool out there in that position for a second. That was the fantastic aspect of the Lindy Hop specifically, because when the leader leaves you out there, the follower can do some fancy steps that weren't part of a dance. That was pretty innovative. Even though, you know, it's still a linear dance and it's still done such ways, but they're still mixing it up with their root basic, which is not the Lindy Hop. It's either a foxtrot basic or called the collegiate style basic, which is just a swinging Charleston, mm-hmm. for lack of better terminology. Mm-hmm. If we can understand that the Charleston is a rhythm, mm-hmm. not a step.
Okay, what, can you tap the rhythm just for reference?
Clave rhythm.
Got it.
Ba 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 da ba 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 ba. Two beat.
Yep.
Pop pop ba da pop pop ba da pop pop, and you dance in two beat the whole time. Doesn't matter what the song is. Mm-hmm. The song could be a 2-4-4-4, but you dance with that two beat clave rhythm on top of the 4-4, and that's what is that was the Charleston. Mm-hmm. When you sit, when you start taking your steps and let's say doing the motion of the Charleston, mm-hmm. but you're swinging it, it's not Charleston anymore. It's 4-4, just whatever. Okay, yeah, yeah. In the South, that was called swing. Mm-hmm. That's swing dancing. You're swinging. When the Big Apple dancers say, swing out, it's kick, step, and the back. It's swing. It's actually the what Lindy Hopper's called the Charleston. Mm-hmm. Frankie confuses things a little bit because they continue to use the word Charleston, but they would call it the Long Charleston or the Bat. You know, they had names to specify the Charleston. But today, Lindy Hopper's just dropped all those terms, and just now they call it the Charleston.
But it's not the same thing as the dance called the Charleston.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a little bit of confusion there as well. Mm-hmm. And that's where swing comes from in Los Angeles as well. Mm-hmm. Bow swing. Mm-hmm. So they actually kept it more authentic in that aspect, mm-hmm. a little bit, as far as terminologies go. Just the whole out and in with the ones and fives, you know. That's simple transition of side-by-side Charleston to facing Charleston, mm-hmm. you know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then the Charleston was a traveling dance, and it went to stationary, and it retained this, it's like doing the transition over and over again. Yeah. But instead of being so severe as side by side to face, they chopped it down to a little V of just the 1, 5, 1. Okay, yeah. But it was still kicking, rock step kick. It was still kicking, Charleston. Mm-hmm. Stepping down was a different influence, of course. And it's all what I would consider foxtrot rhythm, which is like the 78s. So I'll say foxtrot on them.
What's the foxtrot rhythm?
Well, it's just quick, quick, slow. Quick, quick, slow. Quick, quick, slow. Quick, quick, slow. It's still four time.
Yep.
Quick, quick, slow. It's comfortable. Of course, it changes. There's many different variations of first foxtrot. Foxtrot was also slow, slow, quick, 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 quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That was one of the earliest ones. Eventually, it became more. Eventually, the six count won out, thanks to people like Arthur Murray, and using his magic step for everything he did. Slow, slow, quick, quick, slow, slow. He applied that to everything. His shag was slow, slow, quick, quick. His foxtrot was slow, slow, quick. You know, everything became. That was his magic step. So you could learn everything from Arthur Murray. And of course, his prominence in the dance world is so strong that it left, of course, a powerful residue all over the world, you could say. But really, in essence, foxtrot is a lot more. It's just a combination of two different steps, the slows and the quicks.
Okay.
If you just did one of those, it'd just be a one step.
So, I mean, Lindy Hop today's got 8 counts and 6 counts in it.
Yep. Well, Lindy Hop is a whole different wax. I mean, from all eights, slowly introduced sixes for the followers to travel from eight, you know. And like I said, it's all eights. And no matter what, every pattern ended up basically in closed position.
Yeah.
Back to open, back to close. But then when it went from open to open, and I mean not a swing out, but open position passing me by to another open position, that's where the followers and the slower music start applying triple steps and six counts. And you see it if you just look at the Harvest Moon ball clips starting in 35, the highlight reels, 35, 36, 37. You see more and more six count, six count, six count, six count. And of course, if you get the Tops and Wilda clips of 44, 45, it's all six. Not even eight. Swing out six, back Charleston six, everything six. The only thing we can really think about that is philosophy. If you really want to dissect the dance and get into it, you know. And it takes doing so much research to even acknowledge that concept of, you know, if you take a dancer that's an 8-count dancer and a 6-count dancer is going to look like he's dancing much faster than this 8-count dancer.
Yeah.
So it's a more performance-based concept.
Okay.
As opposed to...
opposed to being more impressive. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Whereas in the South, everything was eights. All the dances I can think of in the South were basically 8-counts. Mm-hmm. And it didn't have that showmanship and performance mentality in mm-hmm. the South. It's like they did the Balboa in the South, but it was called the cat step, and they didn't shuffle. Mm-hmm. And it's older than the Balboa. Mm-hmm. Still, step, step, hold down, step, step. But there was none of these rules. You can break open a little bit. You don't have to be body to body. It is a closed position dance, yeah. And then the side step is called the West Bank Shuffle and what they call paddles in circle. Paddle turns was called apple on a stick. And because it was African American, it wasn't about how smooth you can be. It's about digesting the rhythms and being with, you know, so it was a little more loosely based. If a Balboa dancer saw it, they would call it sloppy Balboa. Mm-hmm. When in fact, it's totally not. It's a totally different thing. But it is still an inward expression dance. And then even after World War II, when the Lindy influence came down to New Orleans, it was just basically the six count influence. That was what, wow, you know. There was a very famous ballroom called the Jamaica Ballroom in New Orleans, and so they had their own style of dancing called Jamaica Swing, which is a six count swing dance. It's got its own flavor though. It's got its, you can't, it's not East Coast swing. Same thing in St. Louis. They had their own style of dancing, St. Louis shag and all this stuff. And it was all eights. And then, you know, here comes the Lindy influence, which is six. And you have the Imperial Ballroom. So now they have a style of dancing called Imperial Swing. But that six count dance doesn't look anything like Jamaica swing at all. Two different six count dances. I would say the two dancers could dance to each other, no problem, I would think. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely flavorfully different. Mm-hmm. The Imperial Swing is a very circular dance, similar to, you know, these, when the follower rock steps, she's dropping her shoulder back,
okay,
and rolling in, as opposed to keeping it forward and coming in linear, which was common in like bow swing.
Okay, I didn't follow that.
Well, in linear dancing, if you swing on a follower, this shoulder stays forward or a square.
Okay.
So she's able to come straight in on you.
Yeah.
But in like dances like all these swing dances, when you throw a follower out in the open, she lets that go back behind herself. So when you pull her in and let go, she just automatically rolls into you,
okay,
you, which is common in what you, most familiar in bow swing.
Yeah, okay, I understand that.
Right, and that's what ties all the swing dances together, is they all have that shoulder dropping and rolling in. Whether it's eight, whether it's six, whether it's, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. Whether it's the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, city to city. The one thing that connects all the swing dances that I found is just that shoulder dropping back.
Okay.
Even though these dances have nothing to do with each other, different parts of the country, different music styles, different eras, but they're all considered swing dances, not Lindy dance, you know. Historical, I'm talking about. Of course, you get into West Coast swing, it's from Lindy, so it's linear. Mm-hmm. That shoulder stays, you know, stays square. St. Louis, Carolina shag, mm-hmm, same thing. That stays forward, it's linear. Mm-hmm. Even though the patterns are extremely circular and all that, but when you pull a follower in, it's still linear. I'd have to really, yeah, I mean, they might have leaked in some influence, but that's really divides the Lindy influence, is that it's a linear dance.
You mentioned West Coast swing, which gets me, this has been a bit of a digression from what I originally wanted to talk about, but it's been really interesting, so I'm glad we talked about it. But you mentioned West Coast swing, which is getting back onto one of the questions I wanted to ask you, which is, it appears to be another influence on the blues, just looking at the shapes people make.
Interesting. I haven't studied a lot of blues, as far as modern people.
Okay.
Studied is absolutely not. I've watched them dance and stuff, some people, but everybody I see is kind of different. And I definitely don't go to a lot of blues events.
Okay.
Just because I think dancing any one tempo is boring.
Right.
I don't care if it's fast or slow. Mm-hmm. That just, to me, one tempo all night just seems to be kind of, you know, better. It's just weird, you know. You have to use a DJ, because what band's going to want to do that? Unless they're getting paid really well.
Yep, okay.
You know, and I have plenty of bands that will do it.
Yep.
They're going to get paid, and they don't enjoy it. So that's counterproductive to the whole concept of jazz to me, period, you know.
So I see. So I'm just wondering whether I would expect a blues night to be all one tempo. I'm not sure.
It
would all be slow, I agree.
Right, okay, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's all on time. All slow.
Probably, you know, a factor of two between the slowest and the fastest.
Maybe, but still, it's deep down. Whether it's a dirge, or which would be the slowest of the slow, or you know, there gets to be a point where it breaks, and it gets to be rhythm is the biggest influence to change at all. That's the thing. Like blues dancers would probably, at least the most open-minded blues dancers, and the better ones would absolutely appreciate the hell out of New Orleans because of our rhythms, our stomp. what I call stomp rhythms. Mm-hmm. It's still 4-4. It's not tuba or oompa at all. It's just boom, 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 which is, in essence, boom, boom, boom. Like, even the slowest songs have a punch, powerful punch, which you're not going to get in this slow swing stuff like Oscar Peterson. That's a lot of the slow blues dancers enjoy, or the Ernestines or the Barbara Morrisons and this stuff. But that's the difference, is we dance, I could dance technically blues all tempos, no problem. And I enjoy the faster blues. And if we can agree blues is just a step, you know, to the music, then yes, I love it. That's my forte more than anything in the world. But it takes a really skilled follower as well to do it fast. And that just becomes a Dixieland one step.
Do you think that would be a fair description of the blues dance, just that it's step?
No, not fair, yes, but not always. No, because there's, like you said, there's some dancers that just pin their feet to the floor and grind. And I would, that's the grind. It's not the blues. It's a slow drag. It's not.
Some people would say that the inward connection and you say the inward expression as well, there are important aspects of blues.
Inward, absolutely, not outward. But again, I hate using the term blues, and because then I'm painting the broad brush again, and I don't want to do that.
Okay, so.
Because it's not true.
There's more than one dance, and these statements are true about some and not about others.
Exactly.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Watch how Dave Madison dances. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got his way to do it. Mm-hmm. And everybody's, like I said, it's that's what I'm saying. It's not fair to paint people with the broad brush when there's exceptions to the rule, even if they are minor exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. There's always been this romantic aspect, though, of trying to attach the dance to history, mm-hmm. you know, in places where you go, why do you even care? Why can't you just take pride in what you do? You know, that's a hard thing too. That's the thing with what you were talking about earlier with the Lindy history and stuff like this, you know. I mean, there was, like I said, it wasn't that long ago where everybody was just teaching people to be better dancers mm-hmm. and never mentioned history. That started happening in the mid-2000s, just early to mid-2000s, you know.
I think it's...
Except for, I'll take that back real quickly.
Okay.
Except for like the performance tracks, comp and show, where we're going to teach you this, we're going to teach you what they did in Day at the Races, mm-hmm. or we're going to teach you all the stuff from Hell's a Poppin'. Mm-hmm. That's different.
Yeah.
But no one said, here, we're gonna work on this person's technique who is alive at this particular time. And we're gonna be copycats for this class. We're gonna break down and teach you what Dean Collins did, you know, and Jewel McGowan. And this is now, once you got it, now you can understand why they look the way they do in Buck Privates. Now you can go break down Buck Privates and look that if you want. I gave you the techniques, you have the look, you want to learn the choreography, copy that movie, copy that movie, copy that movie. Before it was, let's copy that movie. Hey buddy, and you know, it's like before it was like, we're gonna do Hell's a Poppin'. Here's the routine. Start here, bop, 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 you know. But then that changed to, no, I'm going to teach you the technique of Hell's a Poppin'. And you can go break down whatever you want. That changed in the early, mid-2000s, where people started referring to history a lot, the Lindy Hoppers. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, most of them weren't historians in any way, shape, or form. And they didn't learn from these people by any way or form. They learned by copying the film, as well as social dancing, and seeing what works and what. And they earned the right to say, this is what so-and-so did. Why? Because we copied his clips, we took it all on the dance floor, we worked on it and worked on it and worked on it, and now we understand it through our own failures and trial and errors.
So it was not by learning from history, it was merely by working it out again.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to some people like, no, I learned from that guy. Yeah. You know, and so that's like a rite of passage in a way. It's a different type of a thing, mm-hmm. right? And in those situations, you might not get what's historically accurate anyways. Because what so-and-so did in 1984 is not what he did in 1938, especially if they're dancing the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's like learning between Irene Thomas and Jean Veloz. Jean Veloz danced her whole life, but Irene stopped after World War II and just did tap, focused on her tap dancing. And yes, she did come out and did some swing dancing in the 80s and 90s, of course, but not much, you know, not much. But if you really wanted the authentic technique, you go to Irene Thomas. Because that was Dean Collins' performance partner. She knew how to lead just as good as follow. You know, sweet old lady that was an amazing dancer. And so, huge difference. Or, for instance, learning from Maxie Dorff, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the names, but no. You can find him on Google. Maxi Dorf, he was one of the original Ray Rand dancers, which people consider like kind of Los Angeles' version of Whitey Lindy Hoppers in a way. Nowhere near as professional, but nonetheless, they were a troupe. They were multi-race troupe. Mm-hmm. It started as four white couples, but mm-hmm. they added four black couples. Mm-hmm. It's better for show, mm-hmm. you know, and they did this whole Harlem versus Hollywood performance thing. But yeah, like I learned from Maxi, who dances, he's a genius, and he was a Lindy Hopper, Lindy dancer, as well as a original Los Angeles swing dancer as well. But then I also danced with his partner from back in the 30s, Mary McCaslin, who didn't continue dancing at all. And so after, like, for instance, learning stuff from Maxi and then going to her and doing it with her, she'd be like, Maxi never did that, or, you know, or, oh, that feels like Maxi, or whatever, you know, I mean, it's a whole... You know, people are going to evolve, even if they don't want to. It's just part of life, you know. And so there's an aspect that's understood, you know. And same thing.
So you used her as a kind of a filter to work out what was
it. Well, it wasn't intentional, though. No. It was more, it was accessible.
Yeah.
It was about access. Maxi wasn't always accessible because he was in Vegas. And yes, we would go out into Vegas and visit, and we had events in Laughlin, and you know, and I would bring him to Los Angeles for the California Balboa and Swing Championships. He was a judge. I use all original people. They dictated the dance. They dictated, how do you want me to do this? You know, this is your thing. I'm here to show you that the young people do your dance. So what rules do we use? Mm-hmm. He's like, tempo decides the dance, you know. All right, we kick up, you know. And then I remember that, for instance, the competitors meeting, you know, and the questions were, well, are we allowed to do a swing out? Are we allowed to do the collegiate shag? Are we, you can do whatever you want. Of course you can do a swing out. You know, the tempo is going to dictate. Good luck. The tempo dictates this dance. And that's why you hear the stories of these guys like Hal and Maxi, where in these big competitions during the 40s, World War II era, they would actually tip the band guy money. Play fast as you can, so we can kill these Lindy Hoppers.
Yeah,
you know, because you had Dean Collins and his little entourage of, you know, Wally Albright and Lenny Smith and his little Lindy dancers coming up, who were not swing dancers. You know, they didn't. After the Lindy was established, the LA style of swing was gone. It wasn't gone. Those guys continued to do it, but the new generation wasn't as in, there was the new people weren't as interested in it.
Okay.
Because it is a fast dance.
So you say, I'm a bit confused because you just said that the Lindy Hoppers were not swing dancers.
The Lindy dancers in Los Angeles, like Lenny Smith, Wally Albright, and the guys that came up starting as beginners around 39, 40.
Okay.
And became better by 41, 42, 43. They're in the movies. You know, you can see them time and time again in the motion pictures. Those are all Lindy dancers, right? Because they learned from Dean Collins. And it was appropriate to the music of the times. But previous to the World War II breaking out, our involvement, the music was faster, you know, especially in places like the Savoy, especially in the Diana Ballroom where the good dancers were. In Los Angeles, this what we call Los Angeles swing, it was a socially pretty quick dance, comfortable dance to do slow for obvious reasons of the technique is so simple.
Yeah.
So the swing dancers, when Dean Collins comes to town, they're like, wow, that's cool. We need to learn that. So the swing dancers learn Lindy. Because of Dean. And so they had a bigger vernacular of dances they can do. And people like Maxi really mixed the two together and became himself. Mm-hmm. And I think Maxi Dorf is by far one of the greatest dancers that's ever lived on planet Earth as far as swing goes. He's a rhythmic genius. And there's other ones too. There's a guy in St. Louis. I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's an amazing, I would just call him a rhythm dancer. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Savoy had some of these rhythm dancers as well. You know, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of film to see which ones are and which ones aren't.
So then there's this competition, and...
People like Hal Tech here, he learned Lindy so he could social dance with the other ladies. Because he was so original in what he did, it wasn't a comfortable social dance with strangers.
Okay.
You know, and again, I'm separating the word Lindy from Lindy Hop. It's two different things.
Okay. I don't understand that.
Dean brought the Lindy Hop to Los Angeles in his own formula, and he created what he calls the Lindy, which is more socially friendly. It's more about showing off the follower.
Right.
It's not what the African Americans are doing in Harlem, which is very eccentric and outward blow, you know, with the body movements.
Yeah.
It's more footwork based and floor craft, and it's about showing off your follower.
Okay.
It's not about you, the peacock, which is more traditionally what the Lindy Hop had become in Harlem. Mm-hmm.
So are these base performance dances or base social dances?
Well, that depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
You know, it really does. I mean, there comes a point where you have to understand, you know, what is social? It's not just lead and follow. Mm-hmm. It's up here.
Yeah.
And we get so developed and so advanced in our, and we have decades and decades and decades of influences and different things, you know. And so it's a whole, there's gray areas everywhere here, now and this year, you know. And sometimes we're trying to put it around in a square, you know. I don't know, I look up top, I don't see social dancing. No. There's a few people, mm-hmm. but most people are showing off.
Most people are showing off.
Yeah, the guy is not even concerned about the girl, or his follower, be it a guy. Yeah, man, if people are running around kicking each other, someone's got to pull a red card out.
Yeah.
Okay. You know,
yeah.
You're performing, dude. Otherwise, you would have never. Why would you kick behind yourself in a social dance? You know, now your attention is more about you just kind of getting wild and eccentric. Mm-hmm. Where's the line? I don't know. It's gray, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, rules can be broken. But mm-hmm. if your real focus is to socially connect with this person, I mean, it's all... very difficult, very difficult, you know. I was brought up around all these old-timers, so I'm pretty damn clear as to what is and what isn't. But that's only because of my upbringing, and it's not fair for me to take my upbringing and paint it on a guy that learned 5 years ago in a studio.
Yeah.
You know, I could educate him and say this is what the old people did, you know.
But he's got to draw his own line.
You know, yeah. I mean, I get to do what I do because of Don. Don Hampton and me are on the same page, totally.
When you say you get to do what you do,
I get to make a living at teaching people etiquette
right.
in dance because it's not there. And I have history on my side.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean anybody enjoys my classes, and I understand that. But I don't care about those people mm-hmm. at all. You know, it's the 5%, the 10%, the 15%, whatever it might be, that do care and want to become better. Because once you understand that, I think it gives you a better opportunity to be a better performer. Because you know when to crank it on, you know when to crank it off. I make a conscious decision to do this, I make a conscious decision to do that, so instead of this is just what I do.
It brings it under control.
Exactly. Yeah. And once you have that control, you can understand how to get big.
Yeah.
And again, it goes right back to history. You know, when you have history on your side, it helps, obviously, because you can name drop. Didn't you guys ever listen to Frankie? Come on, you guys. How many people read his book and you have one hand go up? I'm like, well, you guys, there's half the problem, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not just a sport. I can't just paint numbers on this floor and you walk around. You have to understand it up here and read the stories if that's what it takes.
So that you just said, so that's when you say history's on your side, that gives you an advantage.
Absolutely. Well, it gives me an advantage. If there's somebody else trying to do the same thing without that, yes, there's the advantage.
Okay.
It gives me the knowledge is what it does. Not necessarily right. an advantage. It gives me the knowledge.
So I mean, you just reminded me of something you said about half an hour ago, where you said people were pretending to be. Yeah, we're recording.
Recording.
You said there. We were talking about whether blues is a revival or not, and you said not at all. And you said some people say.
In a general sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Only because the term wasn't used like it is today.
And you said some people, I can't remember exactly what words you used, but it sounded like you were saying some people claim history where there isn't any, and you don't know why they do that.
Yes, sometimes.
Okay.
I think so, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that when...
Or they do the default. But this is what my grandma did.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean America did it, sorry.
Yeah.
Just because your grandma did it doesn't even represent a city. Or even a location, you know. You need more information than that, you know. Come back at me. Okay, grandma and what?
Do you think that these kind of spurious claims of history might give these people an advantage?
In selling lessons, maybe. Sure, of course.
But not...
Because they can book themselves. Yeah, of course.
So, okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. I mean, my grandma danced slow as hell, too. But she's a straight-up hardcore Catholic that was a national square dance champion. And it was like, or not champion, National Square Dance Association president. And that didn't mean they didn't slow dance at all either. And but they didn't get sexual at all. No. It was rocking back and forth or whatever, you know. So, I mean, everybody did. A lot of people did that, you know, at certain generations. But every generation is different. So you could say everybody did that in this generation. The following didn't. Came back a little bit that one, and then it didn't. Then it disappeared. I mean, this goes in and out, in and out, in and out. So that's why it's so difficult to... There is no blueprint, you know, but I can look at, like I said, my blues cards, a figure one, figure two, figure three. I love that. I do that. So I could technically say that's the blues. I do the blues. 1915, what are you doing? Show me. Where's the proof? But why? That doesn't make any sense, you know, unless you're in a school, you're teaching academics. But as far as just social dancing and having fun at this local dance studio, you know.
What's the point?
Yeah, what's the point? Blues is that's not a toll bar blues. What do you mean blues? Aren't you just dancing to the music? Mm-hmm. Why do you call it so, you know, blues is a music form. Mm-hmm. It could be. So there's a lot of ways to argue. When you use terms like that, it's difficult. Very, very difficult, for sure, of course.
Yeah,
it's interesting. And gets into the culture, it totally gets into the culture aspects of... That's the thing. Yeah, most people don't realize, like, America, it wasn't even cool to partner dance at all until really the castles, Vernon and Irene Castle. They made social dancing in public acceptable.
Which is the late 20s?
The teens.
Teens, right.
And because, you know, unfortunately, America would have this total Puritan thing going on. For the castles, it was more about, you know, oh, yeah, the turkey trot. I know the African Americans, well, of course, they're out doing whatever the hell they want, but. The majority of Americans with this mentality were like, oh, but that's so unacceptable. That movement, that pelvic movement is totally unacceptable. But then Vernon and Irene Castle come around and say, but it's okay to do it in public if you do it like such.
Yes.
And make it acceptable.
Yeah.
And they do. And they did it. They were successful in what they did. They made all these dances acceptable. Thanks to them. You know, so we have a love-hate relationship with the castles for sterilizing the dance, but making it popular for everybody. So now what can happen is the next generation can come and make it dirty again. But if you don't start with the crystal clear stuff, you can't get dirty. You can't get dirty with nothing.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You know, you want to do a cool foxtrot? Let's learn the basics. Now make it cool and dirty. Or refine it and turn it into some international crap that's totally has no spirit at all. Just foot patterns.
Yeah.
But foxtrot's a cool ass dance. It's just how you taint what you do by the way that you do it. People have to, you know, Norma's awesome at that stuff, you know. She was a Peabody dancer, too. She would never call herself a Peabody dancer. She would say that Peabody is something they did. You know, she might say she's a Lindy Hopper, and I did the Peabody, and I might have done the Foxtrot. But then you also have Peabody dancers that go, yeah, I also do the Lindy Hop. You know, the Italians were the, quote-unquote, the best Peabody dancers that came out of Brooklyn. And well, that's the way, yeah, that's where most of the Italians were living. But the Savoy was where you wanted to go, because that's where the best are, the best bands and the best dancers, and of course show off. And then you had the shag dancers, like from the Ford Ballroom, them too, you know, even though they're doing this collegiate shag stuff, they want to go do it at the Savoy and show off and show us that, you know. Lindy Hoppers are like, thank you for that step, thank you for that step, thank you for that step, you know.
Yep.
And they either put it in their dance as a step, or it was... glued onto the end of their dance, like the Peabody, so to say. So it was two different dances.
That touches on another question I wanted to ask you, which is when a dance step switches from one style to another, it often changes a bit in the process. It gets adapted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is just basically to make it leadable and followable but in a different kind of people.
Right.
Do you think you could use that adaption process to draw the boundaries between dances, as in to adapt it to make it fit, so therefore this is a separate dance?
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, there comes a point where people are what they call doing Lindy. It's not Lindy Hop anymore, at all. You know, people are always going to debate that crap, of course. The best example would be George Lloyd, Savoy ballroom dancer, moved from the south, north, around 39-40. It's a great interview that Margaret Batuchuk did, a video you can purchase from her. She did 3 documentary kind of things, low budget, VHS camera. She did one, I think you're about 2 hours each. One's Frankie, one's Charlie Mead, and one's this guy, George Lloyd. George is a very, very interesting character. You must check this one out because this is where it really gets into semantics.
Okay.
And he says, and he dances in it, and he also dances with Margaret and switches back and forth with Frankie. And it's around 86, 7. And it's in front of a live band. And he says what he does as a Savoy Ballroom dancer is not the Lindy Hop. He does swing. He goes, Frank Manning does the Lindy Hop. It's routine dancing. It's all routines.
Okay.
He goes, what I do is swing. I just make it up on the spot. And it's all improvised. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're like, interesting. You know, what? It's made up on the spot is swing. But routine dancing is Lindy Hop. It's a performance dance. Interesting. And then he see the two dance, and it's black and white, totally routine dancing, total improv, made up on the spot. More closed position, swing outs, small swing outs, not big at all, bent elbow. You know, Frankie does his shtick. You know, all the stuff. You know, some of it's actually vocally led, as you know. Yeah, of course, points, right. Twirls. He'd call out. You know, Frankie would never limit his leading and following. Visual, he used verbal as well as physical leading and following. He was a firm believer in everything goes.
Whatever works.
Whatever, absolutely. He said, if it's an advantage, use it. Whereas what George Lloyd did was definitely not that at all. That's the number one thing. Another two thing is, you know, at one point Margaret stands up like a typical Lindy Hopper and here puts her follower hand out here, lead me into an 8-count swing out. And he's like, what's that? You know, that thing where you swing me out and pull me back in. He's like, well, it's just all twos. I pull you in whenever I feel like it and let you go when I feel like it. You know, Frankie, on the other hand, boom, boom.
Yep.
So it's a mental approach to dancing. Totally different. And there it is.
It's got these little...
Yeah.
And they were talking about this in the library, weren't they? There was a library talk about how to win in competitions.
Okay.
They were talking about, you know, you have your routines and you have your micro routines and then you have your moves.
Right.
And all sorts of different levels of kind
of that. Of course. And that's going to depend on if you're dancing for a bunch of Lindy Hoppers or if you're dancing for the public. Because that was the 90s for us. We competed a lot in the 90s. But we had $1,000, $5,000, you know, there's money involved. Mm-hmm. And when you put money involved and you do that at Universal Studios City Walk with the local radio station as the judges and 5,000 people watching, and you have every dancer on planet Earth showing up trying to win $1,000. You're battling against salsa dancers and East Coast swingers and novelty dance. Everybody, it's $1,000. There's no rules to Lindy Hop specifically. But we know that's the grandfather of performance dances, you know. So the concept of winning there is going to be totally different than if you go to this Olympic style event where everybody's competing and they're doing scorecards and they go behind a, you know, technique, this, you know, the stuff that we did to win contests in the 90s in front of 5,000 people for this much money could not ever be used today in like the big international or world or this stuff because it would be stupid,
right?
But that's what they did in the 30s. So we dance authentic in our approach to winning competition. Why? Because that was the same as what they did in the old days. You had to use it.
Which one is scripted and which one is not?
The modern stuff is totally scripted.
Right.
Of course, it's Dances for Dancers.
Okay.
It's a totally different monster. You can't use any of those tricks. You can't use any of those things as a tool to win. You know, and that was the key. You know, there's a reason for moves. There's a reason for these. You know, when you do the Dutchman up here, that's when you're in a sea of people and you want to be seen. I would never do that in the floor by myself. There's no reason to.
Yeah.
Breaking away from your partner across the floor. You do that because you got 100 people on the floor and you want to be seen. You know, and you do your fishing pole thing across the floor and get your follower, and she boogies back to you. You know, the crowd goes crazy for that shit.
Yeah.
You know, like Frankie talks about the Apollo battling Harry Rosenberg or whatever. The other, there was like a white, the best of the black Lindy Hoppers against the best of the white.
Oh, yeah.
And they went head to head at the Apollo. And Frankie's like, they tied a couple times. And I can't remember the move he used, but it was something like the peck. They had never seen pecking before, you know? And he won, you know, Try doing that at the European or world or international pecking or slow motion. You're dancing with the big band for 6-7 minutes. Slow motion is something for you for survive.
Yeah.
And you're going to use it in a time when it's going to make you stand out when they're all doing their fanciest shit.
And that's completely irrelevant.
And you're taking a break.
Yeah.
But the crowd's looking at you. You know what I mean?
So that's weird.
This is all technique. Yeah. You know, when you're in a sea of people, scream as loud as you can. Suck a dick. And watch all the dancers freeze and go, whoa. And then you do your step. Boom, boom, boom. And the whole audience is looking at you. These are all techniques and tricks used, you know. But you can't use that stuff today.
Because you're the only people.
Because you're only people on the floor, you're dancing, you know, the men, it's a sporting event.
Yeah.
It's like the Olympics, which has basically been adapted from West Coast swing competitions. That's okay. What most Lindy Hop competitions absorbed what West Coast swing dancers do, starting with the American Lindy Hop Championships. You know, they hired really good West Coast swing, legendary West Coast swing dancers nonetheless, but still, that's who they had as judges. You know, and that spilled off on us a lot. Of course it did. Yeah. You know, when they tell you no chewing gum in the competition, come on. Really?
Not relevant.
Not irrelevant at all. But in West Coast swing, it was by some people for sure. Yeah. So that rubs off, and that's where you get the whole sporting mentality. And it's unfortunate because that doesn't just show the dance in its true light. You know, even though they're so fantastic and so much better maybe than back in the old days or advanced, it still rips a lot out of the dance that shouldn't be there, you know. And I do believe in using judges today, of course, a little bit, because you got to get rid of the non-dancers with just pure novelty. You know, like Monsters of Swing every year back in the 90s would have this one guy that shows up, big old strong guy, and he just did a basic 6-count steps over and over again. But he would show up with this beautiful little girl, high skirt, G-string, for underwear, and he kept her up in the air the whole time, doing the belt, doing this, you know, and everyone's going, wow, wow, you know, and we're like, but he can't dance, he can't dance, but he would always place, you know, somewhere up there, and so it is, you know, it is important to some degree, I suppose, depending on the event, that, you know, you do use judges a little bit, just to kind of, like a flea comb,
yeah.
And then once you've agreed upon the these are the finalists, these 3, 4, 5, 6 couples. Let's let the audience do the rest now. So now that they've passed the technique and they can dance aspects from the judges, now let them put on a show. Now let's see the performing aspects. And that's the part it's a really hard balance. And it was a struggle all through the 90s of trying that, trying this, trying that. That didn't work. This worked. That didn't work. You know,
just framing the competition.
Totally. Trying to figure out what's the best way to capture the Lindy Hop, you know. And Showdown in New Orleans with Amy's event. I mean, if you win that, wow, that's a tournament battle. One-on-one, boom, winner goes forward, loser to the loser bracket. You know, boop, 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 loser bracket, and then, you know, and that, once you get to those last two, it's audience applause. But up until that point, it's 3 judges, 1, 2, 3, and the 3 judges point to one or the other. That's who goes forward. No behind the curtain discussing, no politics, just judges, you know what you got to do. Here you go. 1, 2, 3. Doosh. You're on, you know. And so, I mean, does that work for everywhere? I don't know. But it certainly works in most of the biggest, you know. And I think the most influential competition in history is Showdown. Not history. In the last 10 years, for sure. Amy Johnson and her. She's always trying different stuff. Instead of, it works, don't touch it. Nah, she's like, nah, I'm going to try something new. Boom. You know. Another thing is, you know, divisions. Oh, we have a slow division. They have always showcase strictly classic. Oh, a slow, super fast division. You know, and that just panders to everybody's abilities. Instead of having one trophy, everybody fight for it.
Yeah,
that's where the greatness comes. You know, and maybe just if you didn't win, you didn't win. There is no second, third, fourth. You may be a runner up or something, but you know, and you can maybe score them. But nah, there's one trophy. Everybody should fight for that same trophy.
You didn't mention Jack and Jill just.
Jack and Jill's a whole different thing. That started in Los Angeles from Jack Carey. And that was because in the late 40s, it was the same 8, 10, 11, 12 couples always competing everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they're always competing for second place because George Christopherson was winning every single time.
Right, okay.
And George would just show up without even a follower, drunk. Who wants to win? You know, he would just kill everybody. And so it was Jack. I said, hey, how about if we just all put our girls' names in a hat? And we compete like this. Well, George still won. didn't matter. But that's where it started. And there was no rotation. It was just a random draw of who you got. And that's who started that, Jack Carey, who just recently passed away, unfortunately. A really amazing dancer. Jack Carey. Look up Jack and Annie. Wonderful. Annie's the one that said no chewing gum. Be honest with you. Yeah, she was actually one of the ones that was anti-chewing gum. But Jack was a really cool dancer to watch. Yeah, look him up you'll see him. It's very unusual style of Lindy meets West Coast swing. Partially because of his wife. She was more of a Westie. So his style was mutated a little bit to accommodate her, of course. But check out Jack. He's a really cool dancer and very great person as well. Both of them are great people, wonderful people. But that's where the Jack and Jill starts. And now, look at it. Now it's strictly a tool to make more money come to your event. You know, the more divisions you have, the more money you're going to make. Okay. If people are competing and entering, for sure. Or I'm not going to go to that event. They don't have a Jack and Jill. Or I don't want to go to that event. They don't have a slow division. You know,
yeah.
The more divisions, the more. I mean, that's a West Coast thing. That's all a West Coast thing concept that's been done since, you know, since the beginning of the U.S. Open, right, in the early 80s. You know.
So it wouldn't feature in your grand overall trophy then. I mean, you don't. I think one of the. I mean, this may be just because I'm coming at it from a modern perspective, but I find one of the skills of a good Lindy Hopper is being able to dance with absolutely anybody.
That's a skill, but it's not necessary.
You
shouldn't have to.
Okay.
No, not at all. No, it has nothing to do with it at all.
Okay.
But you're right. That's what people think today, unfortunately. But that's what I would like to see out of a Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
If you can dance with everybody, then you should be able to do air steps. You should be able to do routine. You should be able to do it all with that random person right there.
Yeah.
Not, it's a Jack and Jill. We got to go slower. It's a Jack and Jill. No air steps allowed. It's a Jack, you know. Yeah, well, that mutilates the dance.
Yeah.
Totally destroys it.
Okay.
I want to see talent. And Jack and Jill, just because you're dancing with somebody you don't know doesn't mean the tempo shouldn't be the same. It doesn't mean you shouldn't have the same bar.
Yeah, I agree with
you. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that takes a really good dancer. Very good. Of course it does. And a hell of a good follower. You know, I can't do air steps with everybody. It takes only a few followers I can do that with. And there's been in many a contest where it's like, you get handed this girl and you're like, okay, what air steps are you comfortable with? Quick. I can do the around the back. Okay, perfect. Or whatever, you know, what don't you do? You've got to find out. That's part of Jack and Jilling, you know. But like I said, once it became a studio, now Lindy Hop is a studio dance. It has been a studio dance for many, many, many years. It's definitely not a street dance. It has not been a street dance for decades and decades and decades. Well, since the beginning of the revival, when it's first being taught, you know, it went into the studios and hasn't left. But that's, I agree, I'm 100%, I'm on the page with you. And that's the difference between LA in the 90s and today in the Lindy Hop community. You know, they've tamed it down, and it's the smart people that run events know how to make money at their events. So they're going to have all these divisions and make it comfortable for everybody because it's more money. It's smart business. Very smart business.
Did I say that? Saying that.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, today, like, Amy Johnson's crazy to do her event like this. You know, she's, like I said, trial and error. You know, instead of having, I think, a couple of years, she had a slow division. Not blues, but slow division. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the blues dancers are complaining that these guys are doing just slow swing or slow Lindy. It's not real blues, you know. But she's like, we're just judging you on your dancing. We play the music, you dance. Mm-hmm. Let's just judge you on your dancing abilities. We're not judging you on if you do blues or not, or if you do slow Lindy or slow Carolina Shag or this. It's just music, dance. And that's the old school way of looking at it. And that's also why the term Lindy Hop ended in 41 with the Harvest Moon Ball. Because there came a point where, let's face it, what's Lindy, what's not? Let's avoid all that and let's just call it Jitterbug. And then, you know, we'll end the Shag division, which they did in 39. And just dance. Here's the music. Just go for it. And then it changed again in 51 to rock and roll. It was more reflective of the era and the times. Instead of marking somebody down for that step's not proper, you know, which happens all the time in the Balboa community. Because that's only because they aren't really kind of aware of, or they want to ignore history in a way, you know. Jeremy and Laura getting marked down for doing howl swing outs, what we call howl swing outs, which is his weird interpretation of a Lindy swing out,
okay,
in his version of swing dancing, LA style. He does this kind of a over rotated thing where he pulls in and ran, let go on seven, kick my chain back in, you know. And I think they did it two or three times in the middle of a song, well placed. And they were like, nope, that's a Lindy step. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. Do you guys not worship the leaders of this dance who invented it? Or not, you know? In the Lindy Hop community, it's cool to copy the old clips and apply that. But in the Bao world, it's not cool. It seems to be frowned upon. Or people get marked down. And it's because of this mentality of how they judge. Mm-hmm. Instead of letting the audience, you know, like I said, allow the best to go on and then let the audience decide. We've ripped a lot of that fundamental aspects of, you know, street dancing out. Street dance, you do anything you want. In Lindy Hop, you can only do Lindy Hop steps. Bao swing, you can only do Bao swing steps. Okay. Blues, you can only do blues steps.
I'm not sure I'm clear what you mean by a studio dance and a street dance here, because my first guess was studio dance because people learn in lessons.
And it's danced within that community.
It's danced within that community, yeah. Okay.
And if they don't learn in that community, it's going to be very difficult to dance with those people, because you just learn this certain thing within the studio. Everybody goes to the dance. What do? They sign up at the front door, kind of thing. I'm here to do the Lindy Hop. Everybody else is. That's the studio world.
Okay.
That's the Lindy scene.
Okay. Where is the street dance?
The street dance would be something that's first off not learned in the studio.
Yeah.
And second off, it's done out in the real world, and you do whatever step necessary to survive.
So what kind of events would I go to in order to dance?
Well, it wouldn't be an event. It would be places, bars, clubs, places where there is dancing.
So just you go somewhere, there's a band playing, you find a partner, and you
exactly.
dance on the tables.
Yes.
Okay.
What I call the real world,
yeah.
as opposed to the studio world.
Yeah, understood.
Right. And you have the studio, you have the Lindy Hoppers that come from the studio world visiting, let's say, New Orleans, mm-hmm. and they're almost a fish out of water. And many times they are a fish out of water completely, more often than not. I'd like to say the best dancers adapt, but it doesn't always happen like that. Mm-hmm. I've seen too many catastrophes, you know.
So what sort of, can you describe something like that?
Yeah, I mean, perfect example. Dancer shows up. Yeah, I made it here. Here's great music. Swing up. The Lindy Hoppers are always one the tip, you know, they're the ones that are going to, you know, bump into the piano player, kick over the tip jar, which is about as bad as it gets.
Okay.
That's the band's money for tonight. And now it's all over the bar floor?
Yeah.
Not cool, bro. No. You will get, you know, if I'm not there, I don't know what Chance or one of us local dancers aren't there, you know. It could be an ugly situation. Very ugly situation. I've seen John Wayne get off his piano dance and grab somebody. Oh, yeah. And it's embarrassing for all involved. Not for John, for this poor Lindy Hopper who I might know from this country they're visiting. Who is totally embarrassed, who screwed up, who didn't do it on purpose, but this is the dance they learned. This is what they came to Harang to learn, and now they're trying to apply that in this small club. As opposed to being a street dancer, as a musician. What that means is, if you think about it, in this, the band is here to make money. The customers at the bar are paying money to buy alcohol and beers or Coca-Cola, whatever they're buying. They're here to watch the band. If the band does good, they're going to be getting tipped. Here comes the Lindy Hopper. Brrr, you're ruining our show. The customers aren't going to be happy. Who are these assholes blocking? We came here to watch the music. Who are these people? What are they doing? Blocking.
So the bands don't like the dancers, is that what you're saying?
They don't like that Lindy Hop mentality.
Right.
Yeah, no, of course not. They're trying to work, and this person is using them as a click track. That's not cool at all.
What's the right etiquette?
Well, I would say something of somewhere down the line of standing off to the side when the song starts and just doing some rocking and the jockeys, two steps, something that's closed and unobtrusive to get on time. Slowly move out in front of everybody. Slowly move back. Don't post up in front of anybody specific. When the singer starts to sing, stop dancing. Jockey, enjoy the vocalist for a second. They're trying to enjoy it. They're the ones paying the bills. After she's done singing, first solos or whatever. Small dancing. You know, show that the crowd that you actually know how to dance by just your jockeys and you're moving and moving. You're stopping, acknowledging. First solo, get a little bit bigger. This is in the mind of a Lindy Hopper right now. And, you know, tell a story in your dance. Slowly grow. When she goes back to sing the second time, again, you stop, jockey.
So you treat the singer different from the soloists?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
absolutely. And maybe by the last chorus, the band blows out. Swing out! Bam! Now the customer, wow, that was cool. Are you here with the band? Wow, here's some money, tip. That was incredible. You know, that's the first thing you get. You come here with the band? Nah, I just live up the street. You know, but you're one of the musicians. You want the band to be on your side. I want to be considered one of the musicians, not one of the bar people. I want the bar to like what I do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the responsibility of a dancer, especially a Lindy Hopper. So people go, what was that you were doing? I was doing the Lindy Hop. Wow, I'm going to go Google that. Instead of, band starts, swing out. Boom, 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 boom. Jar over, kicking this, boo, 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 boo. You know.
I completely agree with you. I think we're going to have to go back around this. So perhaps we should stop.
Yeah.
It's been great. Thank you very much.
Well, thought-provoking stuff.
Indeed, indeed.
But I'd love to hear what you come up with after your journey of searching. And I would love to hear.
I can't wait to find out
after you absorb
myself.
It. And,
I can't wait to find out myself.
And where are you living again?
England.
You're in Newcastle?
I'm in Cambridge, actually.
Cambridge, okay. Okay, cool. Did you ever know Terry Monaghan?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. He lived in Acton, but he went to the university there. And he was one of the founders of the Jiving Lindy Hoppers. He unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But he was the only real historian on the Savoy Ballroom. And SavoyBallroom.com was his, but unfortunately, like I said, he was an older guy. He went into a hospital for one thing and never made it out. They goofed something like this. Something.
How old was he?
I don't want to guess, but he was up there. I don't want to guess. I could say he was part of the era of the 50s when rock around the clock came, which was the biggest phenomenon in England when that movie came, Rock Around the Clock and Don't Knock the Rock, where they tore the seats out to dance in the movies. So he was old enough to know what skip jive is in the original 50s, real British dancing was, so to say. But it's really unfortunate because, you know, he's, like I said, he was everything to me as far as that. And he was so academic and so, you know, so British about things, you know, but that's what made him so special. Because he was an academic.
You can trust him.
Yeah. He needed to see shit in print for it to be proof. Otherwise, it's just oral history.
Yeah.
You know, like, for instance, you know, the After 7 clip with Shorty George? Mm-hmm. Well, we think it's Lindy Hop, but there's no proof of that. There's absolutely no proof, you know, because he's an academic. It has to be in print. It has to be da-da-ka-da-ka-da-ka, you know. And so that was his brilliance and his knowledge and the hundreds of people he interviewed that worked at the Savoy Ballroom, not just the dancers. So, and this dancing whole concept with him about social performance and competition was the key elements of the dance. And I'd be happy to, if I can find some of his stuff, I'll forward you some of his stuff for sure on that aspects. Especially the stuff about social dancing, Lindy in the 30s, how it wasn't more than just trying to make the swing out work, which didn't really work. When to pull in, how to let go, you know, just trying to figure that out on the social floor was social dancing. But it was certainly not performing. It was trying to, the focus was making this dance work, you know, and that's the stuff that was really cool about him, and I really miss him for that matter, but I'm sure his research will become available soon enough, I hope, because the family's got, obviously, his office and everything.
I see, so he's not published.
No, oh, he's published, he's done many articles for different people, but he never finished his book, so that's what we're all hoping for, that the family will be able to, you know,
to get the rights.
Yeah, keep his name alive. With all the work he did from all the years, you know, the British people seem to be very—they hold on to their research a lot, and they don't really just throw it out there. They want it to go out there in a certain way, instead of just, you know, I just kind of—I can't say that I was much different than that when I first, and because of him, I changed though. I just started releasing stuff.
What is it that makes you hold it? Is it the fear of being wrong, or is it that you?
No. I don't think it's a fear of being wrong at all.
Is it a sense of property?
Yes.
Right.
Totally.
So you want to be the one that knows?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, when I started teaching with Sugar Sullivan, that was a big deal for, you know, because that Terry discovered her, quote unquote, you know, even though she's living happily and, you know what I mean? But still, he was the one that brought her out and introduced her to the younger community and brought her out to hire and teach, you know? And I was like, you know, and Terry was not a fan of Swedish dance culture at all. And I wanted to bring her here, you know. And but I didn't call Sugar. I knew she'd want to do it. I went to Terry. And I go, hey, you know, I'd really like to bring Sugar out. But I need your blessing. I won't do it unless I have your blessing. And I think the young people need to see who she is. And he was absolutely in agreement, you know. But at the same time, he was telling Sugar, hey, watch out what they do there. It's not the real thing. And, you know, he's telling her all this kind of stuff, you know. But she shows up here. She's like, oh, my God. I haven't seen anything like this since the Savoy Ballroom, you know. And you can see that video I put online of her saying that. It was a Friday class with me and Sugar here, 2003, I think. And it was like the last day of classes. I'm like, well, you guys, we can drill on this stuff and get faster and faster. Or we can go invade another class and have a battle. And that was unheard of in Sweden. But Sugar knew. Me, we're like, yeah, let's go get it. She was 76 at the time. And we raided Min and Karina's class and had a big old battle. We come marching in, circled their class. You know, really cool stuff. And you know, and that's what she says. She was so touched. And she said, I haven't seen something like this since the Savoy, you know. I mean, it was a real teary kind of moment because it was the first time here for her to ever see such a thing. Lindy out being battled because they weren't doing it in act in London, you know. No. The little Chestnut Grove Lindy Hoppers, which was the young kids coming up. And, you know, now Claude is a part of the, I think he's probably maybe even the leader. I don't know, but he's the one that posts all the time on the Facebook page. But, you know, Javi Lindy Hoppers are like not even an entity in the Lindy Hop community anymore. Well, and they rarely ever were. And I think that's partially because of Terry. Terry didn't really like the Lindy Hop scene so much because of the direction it had gone. And he kept it more performance-based, right? And he Mamalu Parks dancers, you know. Everybody's dwelling on Frankie. What about Norma? What about, you know, what about all these other dancers from the Savoy? Well, not everybody knows them, Terry. You're the only one that went and dig them all up, you know. Mamalu Parks and Ricky and all these other wonderful people. So
his secrecy is kind of or his reserve, maybe, as a mistake.
Now I do, yeah. He's dead.
Yeah.
It's gone. It's absolutely gone.
Okay.
He was the number one man. Nobody knows what he knows about the Savoy Ballroom. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. Every 4 years, they change the complete theme of the Savoy. Every 4 years, it's a completely different theme inside. Every 2 years, they change the floor. He knew everything about that place. You know, he interviewed the hostesses who danced with the customers. He interviewed the bouncers. He interviewed as well as all the dancers that he could dig up. And as you can imagine, as a British guy, walking around Harlem at some points wasn't very cool. So he had to earn that because he didn't know the lingo. He didn't know how to get on. So, you know, he's just coming out as a British academic in this really bad neighborhood. And I'm here to study the, you know, and there's a lot of people that were like, shut the door. He had to earn his way. And once he did that, people did open the doors. And he did that through being a really nice guy. And he was honest about what he was doing. And he really did just want to document. But it was a hard struggle he had. I didn't have that hard struggle because I'm from there. So I knew the lingo. I knew the talk. I know the streets. I know the places. When they say, you know that place out there in Culver City? I don't remember the ballroom, you know. Oh, you mean the Meadowbrook? Are you talking about Sebastian's Cotton Club? Which place? Oh, yeah. That, you know. How do you know that? I didn't. Wow. You're older than I thought. No. I got this from reading. No, I'm not that old, guys. Sorry, I'm not 80. But if you know the places and you know the culture and everything before you go talk to them. If that's your ticket in,
Yeah. Then
it's like talking to two kids. Then it's just rehashing memories. But if you don't know anything about their culture and you go to interview, you're only going to get a shallow interview because the interview is only as good as the questions asked. So that's all part of the wax, you know. And Terry was a genius when it comes to that. So I hope, like I said, because it'll open the mind of a lot of Lindy Hopper for sure. You know, he was the one that came out and said, "There's no such thing as cat's corners, you guys." No, that's just a place, that's just the core of the ballroom where the locals hung out. There was no name. But cats meant this back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, the hep cats. That's where all the cool people hang out. That's all it meant. So, of course, a lot of people are going to get their butt hurt because it's like, well, I named my old studio Cat's Corners off this myth, you know, and stuff like this. And when you go around breaking everyone's hearts off because they didn't think about history, it's a weird place to be, you know, and some people can take it wrong. Because you don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, but I want to tell the truth. So anyways.
Okay.
I'm definitely curious to hear what you come up with.
So am I. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, buddy.
That was really good fun.
What's up, bro?